carries in, scores! Patrick Laine snaps it. What a goal by Laine.
Gonna throw this one in the trash and move on. That's not obviously the way you want to start.
Shooting, it's off of Hellebuck. Rebound, it's out of the net. Stopped by Hellebuck. Key saves for Connor Hellebuck.
Johnson scores. Sidney Crosby.
As long as we stick together as a team, we'll be all right.
Stand by highlight. Stand by host. You big boy.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Miles, everyone.
With Drew Mendel, Ezra Ginsberg, and Dave Manute.
And cue the little criminal.
On your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Could probably make a story about, but they don't want to talk about it. Drew will let a shot go. Stop, rebound, they score! Brian Little off the faceoff. And Winnipeg regains their two-goal lead. It's 4-2 for the Jets.
The beautiful tones of one Paul Edmonds calling the Jets' game-winning goal last night. Brian Little made it 4-2. The Jets end up hanging on for a 4-3 victory last night over the Buffalo Sabres. Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca, good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday morning. I'm your host, Drew Mendel, joined in studio by Dave Manuk and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website. With the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com. You can also, of course, reach us here in studio throughout the entirety of the show via text message. Send your texts to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. Want to hear from you via text, via Twitter, throughout the show. Maybe we'll even read it on air if we think it's good enough. Gentlemen, good morning to you both. A happy new year to you both. I haven't seen you since the new year. Nice to see you both. Ezzy, welcome back home from your honeymoon. Dave, welcome back home from your Mexican adventure.
Thank you. Happy 2018, guys. Yeah. It's good to be back. First show of 2018, lots to talk about. And we got a little sun in, Dave, but you know, it's the middle of the hockey season right now. The Jets are in first in the Central, so I'm glad to be back.
Done with plus 31, bring on the minus 31.
That's supposed to be nice today, though.
Yeah, I know. That's why I don't think we weren't looking at the temperatures back home in Winnipeg while we were basking in the sun. At, not joking, it was the most consistent weather I've ever had, plus 31, and thinking to myself, oh, God, I don't want to see that minus 40 with the wind chill.
Is there a Mexican hockey league that's available for you to cover?
No. If there would have been, I probably would have found it, but there was not.
Yeah. You're not interested in just sticking down there and becoming...
No. It was more about just relaxing.
Fair enough. Well, anyways, good to see you both on this Saturday morning. We start with last night's Jets-Sabres game. A victory for the Winnipeg Jets by that 4-3 margin, as I mentioned off the top. And Brian Little getting that game-winning goal in the third period. That made it 4-2, 25 seconds in. Jets get the win. That's all that matters, ultimately. But really, I didn't think, for the most part, that they were the better of the two teams. I thought Buffalo controlled a fair bit of the play. It's just, it's what happens, I guess, when one team is a good team, and that's the Jets. They're opportunistic, and they capitalize. And one team is struggling, and that's the Sabres, and they just can't get that equalizing goal, or they can't get the goal that really give them the lead at any point in the game. And, but I thought Buffalo was full credit and certainly deserved a better fate than they necessarily got coming out on the short end of the 4-3 game.
Yeah, I would agree with you, Drew. And, that last 90 seconds of the game, the Sabres had the puck in the Jets zone for most of that, right? Mm-hmm. And they pulled the goalie, obviously, and had some good pressure. Jack Eichel was really, running that offense there, and it looked like the Sabres might tie it up. And, of course, Hellebuck makes the big save on Evander Kane, who is being absolutely booed all night long. And I have to admit, I was actually, on a plane for the first half of that game. I actually got off the plane towards the end of the second period. So I only watched the third period and of course, watched the highlights of the first couple periods. But it looked like a pretty even game from my perspective, Dave. And I realized that, the Jets had some good scoring chances earlier in the game, I believe. But the Sabres are an awful team, Drew. I mean, this is the second worst team in the league, but I mean, this is a desperate team who was embarrassed a night earlier. And so you knew that the Sabres wanted to come into Winnipeg and, you know, end their little slide that they've been on. But this is a horrible team. But you're right. I mean, I wouldn't necessarily say that this was the Jets A game. And granted, I didn't watch the whole game. But what I saw, you know, the Jets played pretty well there in the third period and by all accounts were put together a decent game for the most part. But, you know, at the end of the day, you get the clean 2 points. And, you know, let's be honest. I mean, Chad Johnson had a pretty horrible game, at least the highlights that I watched. And Chad Johnson has had a pretty bad season overall. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's cliche, but this is one of those games where you're kind of happy that you just get away with the 2 points and, you know, Buffalo doesn't take it into overtime.
Yeah, I don't think the Jets are this isn't the tape that they're going to keep and watch and say this is what we want our game to resemble. I thought Buffalo outplayed them. I mean, if you look at it from the Corsi perspective, if you look at it from the possession perspective, Buffalo dominated 57.5% to 42.5%. The Jets just took advantage of Buffalo mistakes. I mean, Jets opened the scoring at the 9.5-minute mark of the first period after Buffalo was certainly the better of the two teams for the start of the game.
By the way, I got to mention, it was great to come off that plane and see that Buff had scored his first goal of the year because, as you know, Drew, he's been absolutely snake-bitten the whole year.
He has been. He's had many golden opportunities and haven't gone in. But Dave, you know, Buffalo dominates for the most part of the first 10 minutes of the game, and then they take an offensive zone penalty, and what happens is good teams capitalize on bad teams' mistakes, and that's what leads to Bufflin getting his first of the year, as he just mentioned. Buffalo comes right back, you know, two minutes later, Marco Scandella gets his first, and then Jacob Trouba's goal, you know, that's a save that Chad Johnson has to make. I mean, sure, there's traffic in front, but that shot is, I mean, it's not like it's from, you know, atop the circles. That's from the blue line of the blue line, the, you know, the back part of the blue line. Chad Johnson has to fight through that to make that save. He doesn't, and the Jets have a 2-1 lead where they really haven't played that well in the first period.
I guess my view of the first was a little bit different. I thought the second period was the Jets' worst period because they took those three straight penalties, and I thought they were a little bit undisciplined, which led to Buffalo gaining life. I actually thought the Jets had kind of choked out Buffalo and for the most part in that first and part of the second. And then, like I said, they let them back in the door. I think it was 3-1, and they started taking the penalties. So,
which didn't actually cost.
No,
the Jets.
Buffalo was 0-for-5 on the power play. But at the same time, it's about momentum. And you know, if you're a team that, you know, you're a desperate team like Buffalo, who, as he touched on, had already been pounded 6-2 by Minnesota the night before, you think to yourself, why are we giving these guys any opportunity to get back in this game? I tweeted about it last night. I said that the Jets are playing with fire here because I thought the first was probably a little bit more Jets focused from my perspective, but I thought the second period they were giving Buffalo opportunities. And again, even though they didn't score on the power play, they gave Buffalo that chance to kind of stick with it, whereas they could have stepped on their throat. So no, definitely not their A game by any stretch of the imagination. But, you know, again, it's one of those games that I think previously it was almost like a trap, you know, like the you think that the Jets are going to dominate that game. And in a little kind of weird, odd quirk of fate, this is the third straight game 42 the Jets have played against the Sabres on the Jets schedule. And the previous two, they had lost 4-2 and 4-3 the last 2 years. So I mean, regardless of how, like, you know, it's not a pretty win. But again, it's one that perhaps this team may have lost. And you know, kudos to Connor Hellebuck for he wasn't busy in the first two, really, but he kept the Jets in it in the third period, although obviously that third goal he probably wanted back.
I would agree with you, though, that to your point, that if this had been previous years, this is a game the Jets probably lose because they don't necessarily have, I think they have a bit of a swagger that good teams have, where they may not have their A game, but good teams find a way to win games that they don't necessarily deserve. And I think that's the swagger that the Jets have rightfully earned through 42 games this year with their impressive play, is that, yeah, we might not be at, you know, clicking at 100%, but at 90% or 85%, we're still going to find a way to beat a lesser opponent in the Buffalo Sabres.
Yeah, you're right. And they're going to have to tighten up because you've got a much better Sharks team.
Who are probably coming in pissed off after what happened to them in Ottawa, blowing a 4-1 lead last night.
Yeah, they should have won that game. I mean, you got to win that game. And the Sharks right now are battling for their playoff lives. They didn't get off to a good start, and I still think they're going to make the playoffs. But, yeah, Drew, it's a good point. They're going to be hungry. They're not going to be happy with dropping that decision to a bad Ottawa Senators team. So I agree. I mean, the Jets have to be better. But, I mean, guys, since Mark Scheifele, I think this needs to be talked about. Since Scheifele went down with that injury, the Jets have got points in four straight games. And Blake Wheeler is another guy that just has to be talked about. I mean, he is a legitimate Hart Trophy candidate right now. And I was thinking about this, you know, last night, you know, preparing for the show and just thinking to myself, like, it seems like he just never ceases to amaze us, right? And, you know, yesterday is another example. He was excellent, you know, on the two games that they won on the road. The one game that they won on the road.
And he scored the two game-tying goals in Colorado.
Yes, he was phenomenal in Colorado. And to your point, I mean, these are games the Jets could have easily won all four of these games, and these are games that in previous years the Jets would have lost, but they have found ways to win, and Blake Wheeler has just been phenomenal. I mean, he's really taken this team on his back, and I don't think, you know, many people realize how hard it is to switch positions. We've never seen Blake Wheeler play center in the 7 years since the Jets have been back. And it's one thing that Wheeler takes face-offs, but he's now playing center, and not only is he has he switched to center, he's excelling, and he's got 7 points in four games. So for me, it was just a treat to watch those games on my honeymoon, because night after night, Wheeler just continues to impress, and I think he might even be the Hart Trophy favorite right now.
Well, we'll talk about that throughout the show.
And I'm not joking. I realize Kucherov and Stamkos and many other players have had great years, but to switch from right wing to center mid-season in and of itself is impressive. But he's excelling, and he's getting, you know, 1 or 2 points every night, and he's leading this team. So it's just been incredible to watch, as I said.
Jets are 4-0-1 in the last 5 games since the Christmas break, of course. They had the two victories over the Oilers, the victory over the Islanders, the shootout or the overtime defeat in Colorado, and then last night's victory over the Sabres. You know, the Sabres are at the bottom of the standings, or second to the Coyotes at the bottom of the standings. But
yeah, and they're going to stay there.
You know, I didn't think that they were. I thought they played well last night, but I don't think they're that bad of a team. I don't see them. I think they're a team that needs goaltending. They don't have goaltending.
Yes.
And we've seen now, now that the Jets have goaltending for the first time in 7 years, you really do see when you're being sold a bill of goods when it comes to your goaltenders.
Drew, when you're a young, sorry to interrupt you, when you're a young team who doesn't have a very good group of defensemen, you have to have a good goalie.
Right. And the Sabres, I mean, Robin Leonard is very Andre Pavlik-ish in that he's been given every opportunity to do more with his game and to lead his team and hasn't been able to do it for the Sabres since he came over from the Ottawa Senators. And Chad Johnson is struggling this year. And if the Sabres get average goaltending in the game last night, if they get average goaltending, that's probably a game they win. And that's, you know, I think really what you're seeing from a team like the Sabres is they need that goaltending to be competitive, but they haven't been able to get that goaltending. I mean, Jack Eichel was so dangerous last night. He had, I mean, numerous opportunities in the high slot where he just wasn't able to get the puck really on net. He missed a lot of shots last night. But anytime Jack Eichel had the puck, you sort of held your breath thinking this guy has got the talent that he can put a puck in the net at any point in time.
Yeah, and he also got beat by Brian Little on the what it turned out to be the game-winning goal. So, I mean, you know, defensively, you can't, you know, forget about that miscue, which, you know, ultimately could have cost your team the game. So you know, there's little things that happen throughout the game. And, you know, I mean, let's be realistic. I think Ezzie hit the nail on the head. They've got some talented forwards. There's no question about it. But the fact is this defense isn't very good.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, if you watched what they did in front of their goaltenders, and the truth is sometimes, look, goaltenders are not we tend to put games, hang games on goalies. And then, you know, look, everybody was talking about Connor Hellebuck, and Connor Hellebuck, I think, had 26 wins last year in 53 games started, and he's up to 22 wins in 32 games started this season. Now, Connor Hellebuck has been phenomenal, and there's, you know, talk about maybe he's a Vezina candidate. I mean, to me, he's probably been the biggest difference maker for this team, but at the same time, I feel like the Jets' defense has been better this season. Mm-hmm. And I think that's not something that can be diminished in Buffalo, because you look at some of the goals, and, you know, the Blake Wheeler goal, Matthew Perreault was alone in front. I mean, he was completely screening Chad Johnson, unimpeded. And so you've got Blake Wheeler coming in with the shot. Chad Johnson can't see anything. He's got Matthew Perreault. And don't get me wrong, Matthew Perreault's not big, but he's a veteran. He knows where to be, and he screens the goalie, and he sets up that chance. And you could see in Blake Wheeler's reaction after that he went to Perreault and was like, you basically created that opportunity for me. My point is, where was the defense? The defense wasn't on Matthew Perreault. It was allowing him to be unimpeded in front of the net. So while I don't disagree that the goaltending hasn't been phenomenal in Buffalo, I still think that hockey's a team game, and you can't just put it on one player.
Sorry, is one last comment?
Well, I was just going to throw in, and I agree with everything that Dave is saying, and you have a lot of talented players on this team. Jack Eichel is arguably a top 10 talent in the NHL. But, you know, where has a guy like Kyle Okposo been this year? He's making a lot of money. He's got 6 goals in 40 games.
Yeah, well, nobody on Buffalo. Besides Kane and Eichel, nobody on Buffalo scores.
Right. Sam Reinhardt has been struggling this year. I mean, you've got a lot of talented players up and down this roster, but I think it's a team that lacks an identity. Just listening to Dave talk about the Sabres, watching the Sabres, I mean, what is their identity? I don't think they have one yet.
I think that's a fair comment. And the Jets, of course, will see them again on Tuesday night as the rematch from last night's Jets 4-3 victory will take place at the KeyBank Center in Buffalo. When we come back, the KeyBank Center was a golden location for Team Canada last night. We recap the World Junior Hockey Championships gold medal game and the tournament as a whole. That's up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Much more to come on the Winnipeg Jets throughout the program here on TSN 1290.
You're on the curve on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca. Left circle, Patterson looks to the line. Foot is there. Shot tip. Steve Bergen scores! His first goal of the tournament. Might be the hero for Canada. It's 2-1, late in the third in the gold medal game.
Wasn't an easy night to be a hockey fan in Winnipeg last night. You got to have your flipping finger going at full speed to flip between the Jets and Team Canada.
Whoa. And?
And
Manitoba Moose.
Yeah, but they weren't being broadcast anywhere.
You could listen on moose.com.
Fine, but that's different than your... That's not your flipping finger, that's your clicking finger. Because you're using a mouse versus the remote control.
Yeah.
But the Moose, of course, they did lose 3-2.
4-3 in overtime.
4-3 in overtime, coming back from a 2-goal deficit?
Yeah.
There you go. We'll talk about the Moose later on. Mike McIntyre is going to join us at the top of the second hour. We'll touch on the Moose there as well. But last night in Buffalo, Tyler Steenbergen, certainly not the most household name of the Team Canada players, gets his only goal of the tournament. Talk about a storybook ending to the tournament. It's a tied game. It's 1-1. Looks like overtime is inevitable, and then Tyler Steenbergen gets his only goal of the tournament, deflecting the puck in the net. Canada takes the 2-1 lead. They add the empty netter, and it's a golden moment for Team Canada in Buffalo.
And that was the story, guys, for Team Canada at the 2018 World Juniors. The fact that the fourth line was out there, and Tyler Steenbergen was with Drake Batherson, who had an excellent tournament. He had 7 goals on that fourth line, and it was a beautiful tip, a great pass from Connor Timmins, Colorado Avalanche draft pick. But, you know, Steenbergen is a fifth rounder of the Arizona Coyotes. But it's funny, because when you're a fourth liner on Team Canada, you know, that's a point-a-game player in the Western Hockey League for the Swift Current Broncos. That's Steenbergen. Yeah. So, I mean, Steenbergen is not, a slouch.
No.
I mean, he's a really good hockey player, a late bloomer, but you had 15 different goal scorers for Team Canada in this tournament. You didn't have a star. I mean, they've got first-round picks, and that defense was excellent, and Carter Hart was definitely the MVP of this team. He was fantastic, and Ron Hextall was probably the happiest GM watching that tournament, because Carter Hart has had a great year for the Everett Silvertips, and he's been excellent in international play for Team Canada as well. But this team just had so much depth. And with the exception of losing that game to the Americans on the outdoor ice, yeah. I mean, this Canadian team absolutely steamrolled everybody. They steamrolled the Swiss. They steamrolled the Czech Republic. Then obviously, you know, Sweden just can't beat Canada in the gold medal. Now Canada is 4-0 in gold medal games against Sweden. So, I mean, it's great to see Canada, you know, get their revenge, albeit not against the Americans, but, you know, they had lost, pretty badly in the shootout to the Americans last year, and then 2 years ago finished sixth in Finland. So, you know, a great game and a great moment for Steenbergen. When you think about all those heroes, Dave, for Team Canada, you think about going way back to the early 90s, John Slaney.
Yeah,
you
John
think about
Slaney
Matt
and Saskatoon.
Matt Halischuk.
Yeah.
You think about Jordan Eberle, right? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, Tyler Steenbergen, I mean, he's going to have that memory forever. And, you know, it was just great for him, great for a fourth-line guy to score that winning goal.
You know, the as good of a goal as it was, I mean, the heads-up play by Connor Timmins to, you know, from the point, he has his head up the entire time. That's exactly what you want to see. He lays the slap pass only in a spot that Steenbergen can put a stick on, and they're able to capitalize on it. And I mean, it was only minutes earlier on the power play that the Team Canada hit the post on a very similar sort of slap pass across that they got so close on, and then Steenbergen is able to capitalize and give Canada the 2-1 lead, and Alex Formanton, the Ottawa Senators draft pick, makes it 3-1 into the empty net, and the celebration was on. The Hey Baby was being chanted throughout the Key Bank Center and throughout Buffalo last night.
And, you know, just sticking on that Timmins pass to Steenbergen, Drew, kind of reminds you of Josh Morrissey. Has done that a lot, a former member of Team Canada at the World Juniors. He's done that many times, and it was just incredible to watch because, I mean, you know me, Drew. I mean, I've been a fan of this tournament since I was a kid, so I always get excited. And I mentioned that, you know, I got off of a plane around 8 o'clock yesterday, and I was lucky to catch that goal live. And, I mean, I still get goosebumps watching these kids, right? They're 18 and 19 years old, right? But, I mean, to this point in their careers, it doesn't get any bigger than this, including the Memorial Cup, by the way. I mean, you talk to these players, and winning the World Juniors is really, for some of them, will still be the biggest moment of their lives. I mean, talk to Jordan Eberle.
Sure.
Nothing's topped that. I mean, he unfortunately hasn't won a Stanley Cup yet. But when you're talking about the World Juniors, I mean, this is best on best. And that's why a guy like Elias Anderson threw his silver medal into the crowd.
Do you have
because
a problem
these,
with that?
I don't. I really don't. I mean, I think it's a heat of the moment thing. I don't think it was disrespectful. But, I mean, it shows you. Team Sweden didn't want a silver medal, Dave. No. They wanted gold.
Well, because you don't win silver, right? You lose the gold, and that's the problem. You know, like the Americans won.
You win bronze, you win gold,
you lose
silver.
Right. So it's a consolation prize, obviously. Now, of course, it doesn't diminish what they did to get to that point in the tournament. And you know, they played very well. Obviously, like you guys said, it's very hard to beat a Team Canada that's playing the way Team Canada was playing. But, you know, to the point about him throwing his medal in the crowd, you know what? Don't get me wrong. When you look at it from a perspective of a mature adult and you think to yourself, well, wow, am I actually a mature adult to make this decision? You wouldn't do it. But when you're a kid and you've just had your heart torn out, the kid's got tears pouring down his face. No, I don't pile on him. And, of course, social media immediately does because that's the groupthink mentality of social media. So initially people are just tearing this kid apart, saying how disrespectful it is. And then, of course, you have the quick turnaround where people can start coming to his defense and then everyone jumps on that bandwagon. But the nice thing is the guy gave the medal back. So he's got his medal back. And I'm sure he's very happy that, you know, that unfortunately for him, he'll have to deal with that moment. But again,
I don't think it'll last.
No,
I don't think there's any.
Well, it's one of those things. I think it just kind of like becomes like a footnote. You know, people remember it, but at the end of the day, I don't think that you can diminish I think it's a testament to how much these kids want to win and how important it is. And, you know, we as Canadians have a tendency to think of our hockey supremacy and how important every tournament it is for us. But, you know, in Sweden, it's just as important. And these kids put their whole hearts on the line to win these games, and it's so important as a collective group for their country that you know, when you get the silver medal, you didn't win the silver. I don't know you did, but when you get it, it just doesn't have that same feeling, obviously, and not that I've ever won one, but at the same time, you know, it's from his perspective, you can see.
You've lost Drew League softball finals, though, so you know what the
true
feeling's like.
That is true. There's a few times that it's
very similar.
Actually, that's not true. I don't think we've ever actually lost. I don't think we've made it to the finals.
That's right. We lose in the semifinals, but we don't lose in the finals.
We have a tendency to win those final games.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, but guys, I mean, Sweden has nothing to be ashamed about. This was an excellent team that was undefeated prior to last night's game.
If I heard correctly, I think I heard that until Canada scored to make it 1-0, or when Canada scored to make it 1-0, that was the first time all tournament that Sweden had trailed in a game.
Yep.
I mean, that's an incredible accomplishment.
Well, and Elias Anderson, you're talking about Rasmus Dahlin. He's going to go first overall, most likely, in the 2018 draft. At the very least, he's going to go top two.
Yeah. I mean,
most likely number one.
He's expected to be the number one draft pick, the defenseman for Sweden.
Yeah, Elias Pettersson, Erik Brännström. It's a great team. I mean, Canada was
Alex
the better
Nylander
team. It's a one-game single elimination situation, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, Canada was the better team. It was tied up until, what, 90 seconds left in the game or whatever it was.
Yeah.
Less than 2 minutes left in the game. So they have nothing to be ashamed about, and it's one of those situations. I mean, Canada doesn't win every year. I mean, they lost last year to the Americans. They weren't happy about it. And I mentioned a couple of years ago when Finland won, of course, with Patrick Laine, Canada didn't even medal. So give – and also Dominic Ducharme, this was his third year as head coach.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he had a very disappointing first year as head coach of Team Canada. So I thought that was really nice.
The sixth place finish in Finland. Then they lose in the shootout in Montreal last year. And, you know, third time's the rare. It's sort of rare that does a Team Canada head coach get invited back for a third time, especially when you lose the first two.
And he's, you know, he spoke after the game about who he would dedicate that game to. And he said, you know, he lost his father a couple of years ago. And he said he was hoping that he would have given his dad an opportunity to kind of see him win the gold for Team Canada. A couple of years ago, and then even last year in Montreal, didn't get that opportunity. So, you could see how much emotion he felt as the coach to get that gold medal for his team.
And Dave, what I love about this tournament is every year, players that you've never heard of, junior age players that you've never heard of, become household names. Drake Batherson is another guy. Mm-hmm. Drake Batherson was undrafted his first time around, and he had 7 goals in this tournament. Now everybody knows who Drake Batherson is. Everyone knows who Tyler Steenbergen is, Connor Timmins. Kiefer Bellows is another guy who set the single-year record for goals scored by an American with 9 goals. He's an Islanders draft pick.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of casual hockey fans don't know who Kiefer Bellows is, so it's always just a great showcase for young, international hockey.
It was pretty neat when Kiefer Bellows scored that goal and then went back-to-back with the guy who was wearing his dad Ryan Bellows' Minnesota North Stars jersey. And, yeah, you're right, Ezzie. That's the thing. It's an opportunity for players who don't have that cachet, that name recognition, maybe aren't a top draft pick, to get that sort of international recognition from fans across North America and in Europe. So I think it's a fun tournament. I think a lot of people had a great time. And the reality is, while a lot of the games weren't the best attended, that game last night, 16,000 plus, obviously, majority of which were Canadian, really was a nice way to kind of put an exclamation point on the 2018 World Juniors.
And we'll talk about the World Juniors with Chris Peters of ESPN.com coming up in a minute or so. But quickly on the Jets prospects who are participating in the tournament. Mikael Burden, the third goalie for Russia, so he didn't have any stats. Christian Vesalainen, a guy that the Jets drafted late in the first round last year, sort of, beginning to put himself on the map for Jets fans and the prospects. Had a real good tournament. 2 goals, 4 assists, 6 points in 5 games for Finland.
He's also doing very well in Finland right now.
A point-per-game basis playing in the Finnish Elite League.
Yeah.
So this is a guy who, even though he was a late first-round pick, is beginning to really make some noise. And Dylan Sandberg, the defenseman for the Team USA, he had a very solid tournament as well. We'll talk to Chris Peters about that coming up momentarily. Should make note, though, that this segment was brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. To make an appointment to get your teeth to ting, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. Chris Peters of ESPN.com up next for more on the World Juniors. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the curve on TSN 1290.
Ezra, Dave, and Drew return on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour, Saturday morning. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Want to give a big shout-out to Christopher Albi. He's listening to us in Granada, Spain right now.
Really?
Yeah, we're huge in Spain.
We're big in Spain.
Big in Spain, yeah. Big as Illegal Curve following in Spain.
I think we met him at the draft in New York, didn't we?
Yes, exactly
there,
right.
Yeah, I wasn't there,
but Chris is a big fan of ours.
We gave him an icy toque outside of the NHL headquarters, if I recall correctly.
That's where the NHL store, that's where we broadcast from.
Yeah. So, that a boy, Chris.
Yeah, listening to us in Granada, Spain. So, we are huge, of course, in Spain, as I mentioned.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Time to bring in another Chris. This is Chris Peters of ESPN.com. He's joining us from Buffalo, where he was at the World Junior Hockey Championships. Chris, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Hey, my pleasure. I kind of wish I was in Spain right now.
Yeah, I don't blame you either. It's probably a little warmer in Spain than it is here in Winnipeg, and I assume the same in Buffalo.
Yeah. It's a bit brisk here.
Now, Chris, is Hey Baby still ringing through your ears, or have you been able to get rid of that earworm?
Yeah. If I never have to hear that song again, I'll be very happy. I got to say, you know, it's kind of amazing how it took hold with the Canadian fans, and it really did make for a fun atmosphere. The fans were singing it in the concourse after the game, and certainly out in the bars that night. And you know, I think for all of the you know, obvious and I think necessary criticisms about attendance, that final was electric, and I guess that song was unfortunately part of it, because now I'll never get it out of my head.
And we'll talk about the final, and we'll talk about the individual performances of players throughout the tournament. But sort of on the macro level, Chris, how would you term this tournament? You know, how was the quality? You know, exceptional? Was it just an average tournament? You know, how would you sort of evaluate the tournament as a whole from the macro level?
Yeah, you know, it was an interesting tournament. It was kind of a weird tournament at times too. I don't think that we saw every team always play their best. You know, I think there was a ton of star power in terms of prospects. Oddly enough, not as much on Canada, which was, you know, part of, I think maybe part of their success was the way that they had all guys working. But I think, you know, in terms of quality of hockey, it was certainly very high. You know, not every game was amazing. Some of the teams that kind of like, you know, like a Slovakia, they can really kind of slow the game down, and sometimes that can make for less attractive hockey. And it worked for them, at least against the Americans, and it almost worked for them against Sweden as well in the quarterfinals. So, yeah, you know, it's just kind of an interesting tournament to watch. I think we saw some very strong individual performances. You know, the tournament all-star team voting was probably all over the map. You know, several of the players that I voted for didn't make the team. And so that's kind of kind of shows, you know, I was here the whole time, got to see the whole tournament, and there was just a lot of incredible players. And I think really at the end of the tournament, it ended on a high note in terms of attendance, in terms of the best game of the tournament was the gold medal game. So, you know, I certainly will have very fond memories of what happened in Buffalo.
You know, Chris, we want to get to the gold medal game between Canada and Sweden, but I also want to ask you about the bronze medal match between the Americans and the Czechs. Of course, you live in the United States of hockey, and, you know, when you look at, you know, what Bob Motzko said, the United States head coach, or you hear what he said about that bronze medal game, and he said that, you know, this is for the future of USA hockey and having the opportunity to medal three consecutive years. I mean, what does winning that bronze medal, even though they wanted the gold medal, but what does it mean for the Americans to have that type of performance, winning 9-3 over the Czechs and medaling three consecutive years?
Yeah, it's that last part that really matters, the fact that it's now three straight years with a medal, which has never happened before. And I think that there's a feeling within USA Hockey that every time they come out of this tournament, they should have, you know, they should hit the podium. And that's not been the case. They only have 11 medals all time, which is not a lot. And luckily for them, most of them have come more recently. So it's really been a strong push developmentally. They've obviously got a lot of things going for them. Motzko talked a lot about the depth of talent that is available to Team USA now, probably deeper than it's ever been. And I think that it's really important that they kept that streak going. And that's what he was talking about with the future of USA hockey. He said the night before that they owed it to the players that are coming after them to kind of give them something to play for and play for that streak. And I think, you know, the bronze medal is a really difficult medal to win because of the emotional, you know, you're really down after losing that semifinal. And the U.S. had an absolutely terrible game against Sweden. They just did not play well. Nothing really clicked for them. And to come back and score 9 goals in the bronze medal game to make sure that they came away with a medal, I think that the players really received that message that this is not just about you. This is about, you know, giving these guys that next year something to play for. And obviously they always want to win gold, but if you're not going to win gold, coming away with a medal is extremely important, because they talk a lot about Russia. You know, Russia won 7 straight medals. You know, to be considered among the top countries in international hockey, You have to win consistently. You have to come away with hardware consistently. And that's what they were able to do. And now they obviously will try to go for gold again next year. But to keep that medal streak alive will be important as well.
Well, you know, Chris, we're a Winnipeg-based show, and of course, fans are going to want to know about the Jets prospects that we're playing. So I'm going to ask you first about Christian Vesalainen. He had two goals, four assists in five games. What was your overall impression of his the play of the 2017 first-round pick for the Jets?
Yeah, you know, he to me was, throughout the tournament, one of the most important forwards for Finland. I think he was one of the most effective. He was excellent in the quarterfinal that they ended up losing. I thought that was probably his best game that I saw in the tournament. You know, they gave him a lot of opportunities to kind of be one of the go-to guys, and he seized it. And that's what you want to see. You want to see these guys when they're put in a role that's elevated, that's, you know, that they're a key guy they can be relied on, and to see how they handle it, that's really important. I think, you know, the skill level is certainly there. We're seeing, obviously, a lot of Finnish players that are having a higher level of skill. But I think, you know, what sticks out to me is he's got great hockey sense, and that's going to be extremely important. It always is. It's one of the tools that I think is so important now. It can make up for a lot of other, you know, deficiencies. And I didn't really see too many deficiencies in his game here, and really did come away impressed. I think Finland overall disappointed, but he was not at fault for that at all.
Chris Peters is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're discussing the World Junior Hockey Championships that wrapped up last night in Buffalo, with Team Canada earning a gold medal victory over Team Sweden. Chris, who helped their draft stock? Did anybody do anything significant to their draft stock in this tournament for the upcoming 2017-18 NHL draft?
Yeah, I think Brady Tkachuk, for sure. He was a guy that I thought played amazingly well. He has not had an amazing season at Boston University. The production hasn't been very, very high. He still does all the things that we saw in this tournament, but he was able to convert that to points this time around. You know, he was involved in every game. He seemed like he was coming up in big moments all the time. You know, he was physical. He was obviously getting under the skin of the opponents quite a bit. I thought he played pretty disciplined hockey, which, you know, sometimes the way that he plays, it can go over the edge. I thought he was in control, and they looked at him as a leader. The thing that sticks out to me is that he played the tournament on about three different lines, and every time he found a line, he was able to execute and make that line better. And so, to me, you know, I think him, Filip Zadina, for sure, and then Rasmus Dahlin, we already knew that he was going to be number one, but he obviously solidified that with his performance this year.
Now, Chris, I know it's been talked about a lot over the last week, but, you know, going back to last night's gold medal game, is that why Canada ultimately prevailed and won the gold medal, just because they had so much more depth than any other team in this tournament?
I think so, but I think Sweden was as close to them depth-wise. I thought Sweden's top three lines were just absolutely rolling, and I think that they had their depth players were really important. But what it comes down to is, with Canada, they were able to roll four lines. I mean, the fact that every single player contributed in some way, that with the injuries on defense, they were dealt with all tournament. Every guy stepped up when they needed them to. And then the fact that the 13th forward, Tyler Stenbergen, gets the game winner. In you know, they put their 13th forward out there in the final 2 minutes of the game. I mean, that says a lot about what Canada was able to do, and the fact that he's, you know, the leading goal scorer in the WHL and could barely get a shift, you know, it seemed early on in the tournament, then he comes up in the biggest moment. That's just emblematic of what Canada did throughout the tournament. And so I think depth was key. And, you know, there weren't many all-star selections from Canada. I think Cale Makar was the only one that made the all-star team. And really, we were all talking about in the press box, like, who really stood out? It was kind of an everybody doing it thing, and I think that's what's going to be remembered about this Canadian gold medal.
So, Chris, the other Jets prospect that played in the tournament was Dylan Sandberg, the defenseman for University of Minnesota Duluth. What were your overall impressions of his game in this tournament?
You know, I think he needed to adjust. There was a slight adjustment period early on, just getting used to the pace, and I think he handled that very well. At various points in the tournament, I thought that we saw him play exceptionally well. And there were other times where it was a little bit, you know, he got a little bit overwhelmed by the pace. But I think that's just going to come with experience. I mean, this is a kid that still has a lot of developing to do. He's still a freshman in college that, you know, is playing at a high level for the first time in his career. So as good as, you know, Minnesota high school hockey is, and it is very good, It's a completely different animal in college, and it's even faster and crazier animal at the World Juniors. So I think that he acquitted himself well. I think this was a good opportunity for him to kind of test himself. And we saw him start to gain confidence and make some plays and get up in the rush and try and get more involved offensively, even though he was kind of viewed more as a defensive guy here. And I think the sky's the limit for him. There's a high upside there because he's only just starting to kind of scratch the surface of what he's going to be. So overall, I think he had a positive tournament, and he's going to be a guy that I think USA Hockey goes back to when they need him.
You know, Chris, earlier you mentioned your tournament all-star ballot. What does Kiefer Bellows have to do to make your all-star team?
Well, I submitted my ballot before the all-star game. The reason that I went with the players that I went with, one is Martin Nečas, who I thought was probably the best two-way forward in the tournament. He did everything for the Czech Republic. He just ran out of gas at the end of the tournament. The last two games, he didn't have his best. But I thought that he was exceptional, and he's the reason, as much as Filip Zadina's goal scoring was important, he was the reason that I thought that the Czech Republic made it as far as they did. I also had Libor Hájek on there, a defenseman, and he played huge minutes for them and was relied on so heavily, and I think he had just a tremendous tournament. It was really between Bellows and Middlestad, and then I felt like I couldn't submit a ballot without a Canadian player on it, and so I put Drake Batherson on there as kind of the representative of Canada. Certainly considered Cale Makar as well, but yeah, it was kind of one of those things. But yeah, incredible tournament for Kiefer Bellows. I mean, set the American goal scoring record with two goals in the bronze medal game, and really stepped up. I think we've seen, that was the best I've seen him play in probably the last 3 or 4 years. So really impressive from him.
And then Batherson got the Cy Young Award, 7 goals, no assists.
That's right. And Bellows was 9-1. So it was a good battle on both sides of the border for that one.
Chris Peters covers the World Junior Hockey Championships for ESPN.com. You can read a lot more of his work there as well. Chris, always appreciate your time. Thanks for joining us. Have a safe flight back home later on this afternoon.
All right. Thanks a lot, guys. Great to be with you.
Take care, Chris. Thanks again. When we come back, we shift our focus back to the Winnipeg Jets. The Jets at the 41-game mark. We start by discussing the forward group. That's up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show returns. Now you're on the curve on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Short feed to Line 8, crisply over and out to Kyle Connor. Connor's pass scores! What a setup! And the captain finishes it off! Blake Wheeler, it's 2-0 Jets! Little trying to steal, does. Ehlers to Line 8, scores! Patrick Line has gone back to back to back with goals and ties this one up on a good forecheck from Brian Little.
Couple highlights from the first half of the season. Blake Wheeler scoring, Patrick Laine scoring for the Winnipeg Jets. Two of the offensive catalysts for the Winnipeg Jets hockey team. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. Want to wish a happy belated birthday to Mauro. It was his birthday yesterday. So.
And today's my mom's birthday, so wish my mom a happy birthday.
Happy birthday to Dave's mom and happy birthday to Mauro Zappia. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. These are Zappia Group Realty clients, not your mom's clients. She was a teacher. They just come to her naturally.
That's true.
For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com.
We should actually probably say bonne fête to Dave's mom because she was a French teacher.
Excellent. Good work there, Ezzy.
Very good point.
Yeah. I took 13 years of French immersion. No big deal.
It's paying off in spades by being able to remember bonne fête.
I use French like once every 4 years.
I thought you usually speak better French when you get more and more intoxicated.
Oh, yeah. Especially when I'm drinking that Pinot Gris.
Ah, there you go. A French wine to go with your French speaking.
Look at this guy.
The Winnipeg Jets.
I never drink wine. Are you guys kidding me?
Yeah,
I was drinking beer the whole time on my honeymoon.
I've never seen you drink wine in my life. I think if I saw you drink wine, I'd think something was wrong.
There are 150 craft breweries in San Diego, and I tried almost half of them.
Yeah, that's considering your wife is pregnant, that is, she's very accommodating, or you're very rude, and I'm not sure which.
Well, it's funny, because you think I'd be drinking for two, but I was actually drinking for eight.
And amazingly, that was all in one day.
Let's talk about the Jets forwards. We're here, we sit, you know, 42 games into the season. The Jets have a record of 24-11-7. You know, this time last year, at the 41 game mark last year, it was 19-19-3. So we know the improvement has been tremendous. Their regulation record through 41 games was 22-11-8. They got a great plus minus on the goal differential. So things are going well for the Winnipeg Jets. Let's talk about the forward group. And rather than go through individual players as we've done, you know, earlier on in the season, what grade would you give to the Jets forwards overall as we sit here at the 41-42 game mark of what has been an impressive season so far?
Guys, I don't care if you're the hardest grader in the entire world. I don't know how you don't give the Jets forwards an A. Or even an A+. At the very least, it's got to be an A. The Jets have scored the second most goals in the NHL right now. The only team that has scored more goals than the Jets is the Lightning. The Jets are actually tied with the Islanders right now, if I'm not mistaken. But when you're talking about this group of forwards, especially when Matthew Perreault came back from the injury, Dave, and we remember he started off on the fourth line, and now he's obviously not on the fourth line anymore, but especially when Perreault came back from his injury, I mean, this is arguably the best group of forwards in the league, I think, and I'm not being sarcastic at all, or
Pollyanna,
being enthusiastic. I mean, the Jets' top six, especially, has been tremendous the entire year, led by Blake Wheeler and obviously Mark Scheifele, and he's out of the lineup now for the next month. But I don't think you can really look at any forward on this Jets team and say that they've had a bad year or an underwhelming year. And, that third line continues to amaze, by whatever metric you want to use. Their advanced stats, Murat for The Athletic has written about this. Adam Lowry, Brandon Tanev, and Andrew Kopp has been a phenomenal third line, even though we thought that was most likely going to be the fourth line this year. But you go up and down this roster. I mean, pick whoever you want, Dave. Kyle Connor's having an excellent rookie year. Patrick Laine leads the team with 18 goals. Matthew Perreault has been phenomenal. Point-a-game player at home. He's got 21 points in 30 games. I mean, up and down this group of forwards, it's just been an absolute treat. Joel Armia, I think, hasn't been talked about enough. He's got 16 points this year. He's on pace for a career year. So, I mean, up and down the roster, I think you have to give this Jets group of forwards an A.
I, too, agree with that. I think Ezzy's right. I think overall, there's been a few disappointments in this. Obviously, Sean Mathias hasn't been having his optimal season. Came back finally after sitting out all those games, scored a goal. Marco Dano was in the press box for all that time while the Jets had, guys ahead of him in the lineup. But overall, I mean, you have to look at this team. And Brian Little had a bit of a slow start. But again, that's somewhat understood simply because he's playing with two younger players, meaning he's got more defensive responsibilities. So he's not going to be necessarily putting up the points, although he has of late started to contribute more in terms of goals and assists. But really, there's an adjustment period for a guy like Brian Little. So you kind of give him a bit of a pass in that regard simply because he's got to do so many things. He's got to be, he's got to be the father figure on that second line. So overall, I think Ezzy's right. I mean, this team's offensive power is as dangerous as anybody else's in the NHL. And I think that overall, I mean, if you need a grade from me, I would say it's an A. But, I think that this team has been pretty lights out from the contributions they're getting from most of the players night in and night out.
There was an interesting article. Sorry, Ez. There was an interesting article in The Athletic. Tyler Dello sort of did his 41-game review of the Winnipeg Jets. And he broke it down into sort of two segments. He looked at the Jets in games 1 through 19 and games 20 through 41. And the improvement, if you remember back when the Jets were playing well, even in the first 19 games of the season, their Corsi numbers were pretty terrible towards the bottom of the NHL. The improvement the Jets have made on a possession basis in that second 20-game segment is, according to Tyler Dello, the biggest improvement we've seen this decade. The Jets improved from 46.1% Corsi 4 in the first 19 games up to 54.6%. And you're seeing it right across every line for the Winnipeg Jets. In the first 20 games, the first line was 44%. Now they're 53%. Line 2, 50% to 53%. Line 3, 47% to 59%. And line 4, 43% to 55%. So as good as the Jets were playing in the first 20 games, there may have been a bit of a mirage around it.
Well, no, or Their goaltending was very good.
And then in the second 20 games, it's no longer a mirage and it's no longer just goaltending. This team is beginning to be a possession juggernaut, like one of the upper echelon teams in the NHL.
Yeah, and there's no question, guys, that the top two lines have been driving the bus offensively, mm-hmm. especially the Wheeler-Shifley line with Kyle Connor. And obviously now, you know, Shifley's out of the lineup, so Ehlers has gone up to that top line. But for me, it's that third line. And Brandon Tanev is obviously out of the lineup now on injured reserve, but Matthew Perreault replaces him. So they really don't miss a beat with Matthew Perreault now mm-hmm. on that third line, right? So, you know, you mentioned the Corsi, and that's a 13% improvement for that third line. And, you know, Brandon Tanev, to me, is maybe the most improved player in the entire league. He's really been that good, and I think Adam Lowry, you know, quietly has putting together another really good year after having a career year last year with 15 goals. And, you know, Joel Armia, you know, I mentioned, he's been on the fourth line most of the year, mm-hmm. and he's been really good. He's been out there in special team situation, both power play and penalty kill, mainly penalty kill. So, I mean, the only negative guys for the Jets maybe is, you know, players like Marco Dano and Sean Mathias, who have been healthy scratched for big parts of the season. But, I mean, who would have thought Mathias and Dano would be healthy scratches this year, right? We thought that maybe players like Brandon Tanev would be in the American Hockey League. So, mm-hmm. I mean, that just shows you the depth that this Jets team has. But up and down the lineup, I don't think you can find very many weaknesses.
Are there any regulars? So let's leave out Sean Mathias and Marco Dano, because they're probably not regulars. They are right now as the injury bug strikes. But are there any regulars that among the Jets forward group that you think has more to give? Maybe not disappointing you right now, but has more to give in the second half as the games get harder, as the games get more important, as the competition ramps up leading into the playoffs? Is there any individual player that you think has more to contribute to the Jets from the forward group?
Well, I think you could name a handful of players who you'd expect more out of both offensively and defensively. I still think, you know, Patrick Laine has more to give 5-on-5. For example, I think Nikolai Ehlers has more to give 5-on-5. Ehlers has been one of the Jets' best offensive players, not just this year, but last year as well. You know, you'd expect Brian Little to score a little bit more. He's only got 8 goals so far this year. He's played all 42 games. But, you know, I don't think you can necessarily single out one or two forwards, because for the most part this year, you know, they've been very consistent. You can't really, you know, pick out one forward with the exception of, you know, maybe a Sean Mathias or a Marco Dano. The regulars, Drew, I think, you know, Matthew Perreault, I mentioned, since he's been back from injury, he's been tremendous. But I think whether it's the first line or the fourth line, I think for the most part, you know, we've seen pretty consistent performances from this group of forwards. A guy like Andrew Kopp, for example, for me, has been excellent all year. But Andrew Kopp's not a 20-goal scorer. So I can't say, you know, Andrew Kopp, you know, you expect him to, you know, score 10 goals in the second half of the season, because I don't think that's realistic. A guy like Brian Little, I mean, that's your second-line center. You expect him to maybe increase his goal totals, but I've been very pleased with this group. I really can't really single out anybody else and say that, you know they have, you know, more to give in the second half. But
as a collective, you're saying,
as a collective, the whole team, you can always get better.
The whole team needs to sort of not improve, but just as the competition gets more difficult, they need to match. As the opponent's level improves in the second half, the whole team will need to match that competition level.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. And, you know, even if you're talking about, you know, guys like Blake Wheeler or Mark Scheifele or Nikolai Ehlers, they'll tell you they can be better. But we talked about it. I mean, this team has a top three power play in the league, and they're second in the NHL in goals.
Guys, this team lost their number one center and hasn't missed a beat.
Right.
4-0-1.
If that goes to show you about the depth of this organization right now, that you can lose a top center. I mean, think about what would have happened if this team would have lost a Brian Little without having that replacement player a few years back, right? So, I mean, to be able to lose Mark Scheifele, have Blake Wheeler slide in, move Patrick Laine up, flip Nikolai Ehlers to the right side, have Matthew Perreault jump from the fourth to the second, and really not miss a beat and continue to win. I mean, first of all, it just speaks to the depth of the team. Not only that, but just think about how good this team is going to be when Mark Scheifele is healthy, you know, and rested in whatever the timeline was, 6 to 8 weeks. So when you get Mark Scheifele back, and it's going to be like getting a player you traded for, because really, it's a guy. If this team can maintain this, I mean, there's no guarantee, of course, but if this team can, because as you just touched on, it's going to ramp up. If this team maintains where they are and they keep doing this, and then they get a guy like Mark Scheifele back, I mean, that's just such a shot in the arm for this group, because, again, with the way they're playing and the depth It just speaks to how good this forward group is playing this season.
Mike McIntyre of the Winnipeg Free Press joins us next for more conversation about the Jets and probably even the Manitoba Moose. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Hour number two is up next on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290. Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Manuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. That's where all your latest Winnipeg Jets, Manitoba Moose news and audio is. You can also reach us here in studio. Send us your text messages. Text 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. If we like your text, you might even read it on air. Same goes with our Twitter at Illegal Curve.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the program a good friend of ours from the Winnipeg Free Press. He is Mike McIntyre. Mike, good morning. Happy New Year, and thanks for joining us.
Hey, good to be here, guys. Happy New Year to all of you.
Thank you very much. Mike, we were just talking about the Jets forwards. We're sort of looking at the team at the 41-game mark, and it's hard to criticize or critique one of the what I'll call the Jets regulars. So I'm leaving Sean Mathias and Marco Dano sort of out of the equation right now. It's hard to criticize anybody for their performance through the first 41 games. Do you get the impression that from this forward group, as the games get more important, as the competition ramps up, as we get closer to the playoffs, this group is just craving that opportunity to play significant hockey games when it really matters?
I do, and I think that's because you really get that feeling from the leader of the team, Blake Wheeler. You know, he has made it explicitly clear, sometimes in an almost hostile way, that he could care less about personal statistics, accolades, that sort of thing, that it is all about the bottom line, and that is winning hockey games. And not winning hockey games just in January, but winning hockey games when it really matters. And so I think from the leader, you know, the leadership of this team on down, Mark Scheifele was saying a lot of the same things before he got hurt. These guys are absolutely craving the opportunity to finally be able to, you know, to get on that big stage and to actually, make an impact. And so, I think when you hear things like that from your leadership, it can't help but trickle down in that dressing room, and I think that's what you're seeing from this team.
You know, Mike, I wasn't in the building last night, unfortunately. I was stepping off of a plane after a quite lovely honeymoon, I must say. But
yes, congratulations.
Thank you very much, Mike. And how relieved, though, was Dustin Byfuglien to finally get his first goal of the year, though?
Well, yeah, that was a bit of an epic celebration. He scored, throwing his arms sort of outwards and looking up to the sky and kind of soaking in the crowd. I must say, the crowd last night, and Paul Maurice even mentioned this after the game, it wasn't very loud in the building last night. It was kind of just a ho-hum game, and there was really only two moments last night to me where things got really loud. The first was when Dustin Byfuglien scored. The crowd really came to life, much more so than just a normal first goal of the game, because I think the crowd recognized that this is a guy who hadn't scored in 30 games. You know, and I think in his case, they really let him hear it, let him know that they appreciated what he had done. And the other moment was when Team Canada scored the game-winning goal, and it was announced in the building that Canada had gone up 2-1. That was the loudest cheer of the night last night, which was kind of interesting. But, yeah, it's obviously a big relief for Byfuglien. He didn't speak after the game, so we can't tell you exactly what he felt about it. Interesting to note, Dustin Byfuglien wasn't on the ice for the last 2 minutes and 50 seconds last night with a one-goal lead. We asked Paul Maurice about that after the game. And, you know, I don't want to use the term benched, but he deliberately didn't have Dustin Byfuglien out in those final minutes last night. He basically went down to four defensemen, Josh Morrissey, Jacob Trouba. And then in the final minute, it was Dmitry Kulikov and Tyler Myers who were out there. Dustin Bufflin only played about 17 minutes last night, which I think is his lowest total of the year, except for the game he got hurt. I didn't see anything from Bufflin yesterday that sort of stood out that he was being, you know, sloppy or taking high risk. But it is interesting that with the game on the line, Dustin Bufflin wasn't out there.
You know, Mike, another interesting thing to note is this talk of Blake Wheeler staying at center. I thought that was, you know, I mean, again, you know, he's done very well in the last few games since his move from the wing over to center. But, and I thought the exchange he had last night was rather interesting with you guys. So what do you think, what do you make of all this talk about Blake Wheeler staying at center, even when Mark Scheifele comes back and is healthy?
Well, I'll say this. I mean, again, the potential that would open up for this team if that became permanent, and suddenly, I mean, my goodness, if your top four centers were an extremely effective Blake Wheeler, Mark Scheifele, Brian Little, and Adam Lowry, I mean, that would give the Jets the kind of size and speed and skill and everything up the middle that I'm not sure if there'd be really many, if any, teams in the NHL that could have that. That being said, we're talking about an extremely small sample size here of four games. Paul Maurice has said that Blake Wheeler has adjusted to playing center much more effortlessly and seamlessly than he anticipated. And obviously the points are coming in a major way. I mean, who would have thought that Blake Wheeler, who had 9 goals in his first, whatever it was, 38 games, he's now scored 5 in 4 games since moving to center. He's got 2 assists as well. So, you know, he's getting a lot more touches of the puck. And I think defensively he's been fantastic as well as a center. So it was interesting to hear Paul Maurice actually admit last night that if Wheeler keeps this up, that is absolutely something they'd have to consider. And then sort of go on to say that would open up other possibilities for the Jets going forward. But, you know, I don't know if anybody expects Blake Wheeler he's not going to score every game, right? He scored in all 4 games. In 1 game he had 2. That can't continue, can it? much like Kyle Connor is up with the Jets because of an injury early in the year that opened the door for a new opportunity, wouldn't it be something if Blake Wheeler and the Jets suddenly found something they maybe didn't even realize they had, also because of an injury?
Mike McIntyre of the Winnipeg Free Press is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're discussing the Winnipeg Jets. Victors last night over the Buffalo Sabres by a 4-3 margin. The San Jose Sharks in town tomorrow afternoon for a matinee at Bell MTS Place. Mike, you look at Sean Mathias. He played 6 minutes and 10 seconds last night. You look at Marco Dano, 4 minutes and 13 seconds. Does that tell you, those times on ice, tell you at all that we might be seeing Jack Roslovic sooner rather than later?
I think they do. And Paul Maurice's comments the other day were telling as well. Where I don't want to say he called those guys out, but he certainly named them publicly. Mm-hmm. And you don't hear that from Paul Maurice a lot where he does that. But he actually mentioned those two guys by name and said they're under a lot of pressure. Now, you can make the that when they're only playing that many minutes, are they even really being given the opportunity to either succeed or fail? Or are they playing so few minutes, excuse me, because in Paul Maurice's mind, maybe they're not as effective as he'd like them to be. It's almost a chicken or an egg sort of argument. But I do wonder, with Brandon Tanev possibly a week or so away from returning, do the Jets try and get Jack Roslovic, even if it's just one game, just to see what that looks like? And I think that very likely could happen, because let's face it, when Brandon Tanev comes back, one of Mathias or Dano comes out of the lineup, presumably, and they go back to how they've had things, absent of Mark Scheifele, of course. And so Roslovic's chance probably becomes even slimmer at that point. He may actually just go right back to the Moose when Tanev comes back. So maybe we see him, I don't know if it would be tomorrow, maybe it's Tuesday in Buffalo, but it wouldn't shock me to see them at least give give him a one-game look, especially hearing how much Paul Maurice raved about him the other day, going out of his way to actually praise how he's looked in practice. It gave you the impression that he's sort of chomping at the bit to see him in game action.
Mike, we wanted to ask you about an article you wrote yesterday for the Winnipeg Free Press about the potential of two games in Finland next year that the Jets would play as part of the Global Series. What's the potential, I guess, what's the likelihood of this happening? Is this a done deal, or is there still things that need to be worked out before this actually happens?
Sounds like there's definitely things that still need to be worked out. And it's worth noting that last year, the NHL made the announcement of the Global Series games between Colorado and Ottawa, which just got played in Sweden, of course. They made that announcement in early March. So here we are, early January. If you go by a similar timeline, we might still be a couple months away from a similar announcement. Elliot Friedman, in his 31 Thoughts column, was the first to sort of throw it out there that Winnipeg and also Carolina were the two teams being looked at, which, when you think about it, makes perfect sense. There's two Finns on each team, and of course Patrick Laine would be the absolute star attraction. But you've got Joel Armia, and then you've got Tero Teravainen and Sebastian Aho, a very promising young Finn as well on Carolina. So those guys would obviously be, you know, the selling point, if you will. And so, you know, I asked about it the other day in the locker room, and Patrick Laine, he was the first to sort of admit that, yeah, he's absolutely heard the talk about it. And not only that, he's extremely excited, as you can imagine. I asked Paul Maurice about it. Paul Maurice had actually done a trip to Finland in his previous coaching career. So he said he's aware of it, and he's aware of the talks that are going on. Made it almost sound like the Jets are waiting to see if they are going to be the team, or one of the two teams that's selected. Said if they are, he's good with it. You know, it would probably be something earlier in the regular season, just like Colorado and Ottawa played. But obviously, it would be quite the coup for the Jets to expand their reach, if you will, on a much bigger stage. And there's a lot of history, as we all know, between Winnipeg and Finland with Team Lenny, and you wonder if he'd somehow play a role in all this as well, if they were to go over there. But obviously very exciting, and it would mean each team would give up one of their home games on their schedule. So we'd see one last game at Bell MTS Place, but I suspect fans would be willing to sacrifice that if it meant seeing their team on such a big stage.
You know, Mike, with how well the Jets are doing, sometimes we have a tendency, not you and I, of course, but people have a tendency to lose focus on how well the Moose are doing, number one team in the AHL. You wrote at the end of last month about the 2015 draft class and how that's been just such a turning point for both organizations. You know, we're seeing now Jack Roslovic scratching the surface, Sammy Niku's doing well. What have you seen from, and you talk to a lot of you talk to the GM, you talk to some of the scouts. What are they talking about with that draft class? Are they realizing or recognizing what a big home run they hit with that entire draft class?
They really are, and it starts with what they did in the late rounds. I mean, everyone knows that Kyle Connor, and now it appears Jack Roslovic, are quite the 1-2 punch in the first round of the draft. But let's be fair, you look at a lot of the players that were taken in that 2015 first round, there were a lot of good names in there. So as good as the Jets probably did with Connor and Roslovic, there's other players as well that they probably couldn't have gone wrong with. But it's what they did late in that draft, like at the very end, round 6 and 7, which you know, those are the rounds where, for the most part, you almost never hear of players that get taken in that round. A lot of those guys forget about having an AHL career. A lot of those guys don't even have an ECHL career. They just never go anywhere because, you know, when you're picking guys that late in the draft, there are obviously a lot of flaws with those players, or at least they're seen to have flaws, which is why they've fallen so far. That's not to say they're not good hockey players, but there's a reason they go that late. And there's a reason that 30 other teams, or in 2015, 29 other teams, passed over those guys, not just once, but multiple times. So I think that's where this draft, perhaps more than any other since the Jets have returned to Winnipeg, has the chance to be something very special because, you know, Sammy Niku and Mason Appleton aren't just big contributors on this year's Moose team as rookies. They are taking the American Hockey League by storm as rookies, with each of them, you know, right up there among the league leaders in not just rookie scoring, but overall scoring at their position. Niku as a defenseman, Appleton as a forward. And so, you know, it's tough to project what that means in another year or two or three and the potential to be up with the Jets. But I think when you see what Niku and Appleton have done so quickly, it certainly is is exciting when it comes to what they've done in that draft. And then throwing a guy like Eric Foley, who has to turn pro, who was taken in one of the middle rounds there, and he's absolutely tearing it up in college. He's a guy, Dave, that we could actually see with the Moose before this year is done, because his team in Providence is not very good. He is absolutely blowing away the rest of his teammates as the scoring leader on that team. Once the college season is over, now he hasn't signed with the Jets organization, but they could sign him to, you know, an amateur tryout, and we've seen that happen before. And what an addition that could be for the Manitoba Moose to get a scoring power forward like Eric Foley, coming off a fantastic college career, joining the team late in the season. So the possibilities for this to be a really special draft, it would seem, are endless at this point.
Now, Mike, I just have one quick follow-up. Are you dump or are you chase? And maybe tell our listeners about your new feature for the Winnipeg Free Press. Just going to provide some more hockey coverage for the Jets and the Moose.
Well, I think given the wording there, I would have loved to have been chase, but my colleague Jason Bell quickly grabbed that moniker, so that left me with being dump. But yeah, we're kind of excited. It's going to debut next Thursday online. It's going to be an online-only feature at the Winnipeg Free Press. But yeah, lots of fun stuff we've got planned for it, some quirky things and some sort of off-the-beaten-path stuff. So yeah, it'll be a weekly feature every Thursday, dump and chase. And yeah, I guess I'm dump.
I don't know how to follow up on that one there, Mike, but you're still, you know what, you're number one in our hearts. You're not number two. How about that?
Appreciate it, guys. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Mike. We'll talk to you again soon.
Take care.
When we come back, we're going to look at the Jets special teams and goaltending as part of our 41-game review. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
On the Curve. On the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca.
Eberle, the Prince, pulls it out of his skates. Side of the net, he gets robbed. Ladd just gets stoned by Hellebuck.
At the 10-minute mark in a two-goal hockey game, he gets his toe out in a desperation save. This is a one-goal hockey game. If he doesn't make that timely save.
Connor Hellebuck, the backbone for the success of the Winnipeg Jets through the first 41-42 games of the season.
He's their heart-shaped goaltender.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. This segment brought to you by Keener Jerseys. Specializing in customization services and branded team apparel, Keener Jerseys is changing the game with world-class craftsmanship and unparalleled service. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want customized, visit Keener Jerseys online at keenerjerseys.com or check out their showroom, 982 Portage Avenue. That's the corner of Portage and Sherbourne. Tell them that Illegal Curve sent you.
Did you see the new 2018 All-Star Game jerseys?
I didn't.
I really like them.
Yeah? Are they nice?
Yeah.
Okay. What do you think of the Team USA and the Buffalo Sabres inspired Buffalo Bills inspired Team USA jerseys for the outdoor game?
I actually didn't see those I was in San Francisco.
On your honeymoon, we know.
Yeah, I didn't catch that game, unfortunately, so I'll have to Google that.
Okay, yeah, apparently they were, I don't know, I heard mixed reviews of them. I didn't really see much of it either. But anyways, Keener Jerseys, if you ever need to talk jerseys, that's where we would certainly recommend you head. Talking about the Jets goaltending, I mean, Connor Hellebuck, what can you say? 33 starts now in the Jets, 42 games played, or 32 starts, pardon me, in the Jets, 42 games played. He's third in the NHL in wins with 21. He's top 10 in save percentage, top 5 in goals against average. do the Jets, though, you know, they're using them way more frequently than anyone expected at the beginning of the year. Do you have any fear? Do you think there's any risk in the Jets maybe wearing out Connor Hellebuck as he's playing more games than he's ever played at the NHL level?
No, I don't. And I think Connor Hellebuck, if you ask him, would probably tell you that he'd play every game. So, you know, if you want to start off with goaltending, Drew, and then go into special teams,
yeah.
I have to give the goaltending an A. And I think that's just, you know, based simply on the fact that Connor Hellebuck has been so good, and I realize that Steve Mason, you know, hasn't played as many games as we thought, and he's certainly struggled earlier in the season. Then he ran into a little bit of an injury problem there. But, I mean, Hellebuck might end up playing, you know, 60-plus games this year, and, you know, I don't think anybody would be surprised because he's been that good game in and game out, and he's had some bad games. He hasn't had, you know, a great game every time he's been out there, but especially at home. I mean, he's only lost, what, 3 games in regulation this year?
I think that's correct. He's lost four games in total, but in terms of regulation, yeah.
Right, so, I mean, that's incredible, guys, with the amount of games he's already played. So, I mean, we've talked about it ad nauseum here, you know, in the first 3 months of the season. I mean, in the offseason, he really worked hard. He worked really hard, you know, in the offseason to work on the mental approach, and he worked really hard, you know, to improve the tracking of the puck and his positioning. Trevor Kidd has talked about it a lot on the station, and, you know, the results have really shown that he's worked on his game. And, you know, I think, you know, last year the big criticism of the Jets was that the goaltending was not good enough. And it wasn't just Connor Hellebuck. It wasn't just Michael Hutchinson. It was overall that the goaltending wasn't good enough. But the team defense also wasn't good enough. And this year they're getting top-notch goaltending from Connor Hellebuck. And at times Steve Mason has provided that as well. So, no, Drew, I don't have any problem with Hellebuck playing 60 or more games. He's a young goaltender. He's in his mid-20s. And, mm-hmm. and when he's playing this well, I think you got to ride him.
From game 20 through game 41, save percentage at 5-on-5 was .921, which is much more of the league average than it had been through the first 19 games, which his save percentage at 5-on-5 was .942. So he was never going to stay at .942 5-on-5 save percentage. He's come sort of down to earth a little bit more, but he hasn't missed a beat because the team behind him, or the team in front of him, has actually improved their play since that first 19-game stretch of the season. So while he was exceptional, he's brought it back down, but while the team was, you know, I guess struggling but succeeding, they've actually picked it up, so they're playing better and continuing to succeed. Dave, what about the special teams for the Winnipeg Jets? I mean, the power play last night was incredible, responsible for two of the Jets' goals, tied second in the NHL at 24.8% with the Tampa Bay Lightning, and then the penalty kill, which for so long had been sort of a bugaboo of the Winnipeg Jets, that's 13th overall, 81.6%. It just seems like they're clicking on all cylinders for the most part through the first 41, 42 games of the season.
Yeah, there's no question. And when you have the firepower that the Jets do, there's, you know, it's kind of an expectation when you have Patrick Laine able to, you know, blast that shot. And really, Blake Wheeler, Mark Scheifele, the entire kit and caboodle. I mean, the reality is that this team is just so deep that you really can roll out anybody. And even when you put out the second power play unit, and as we saw yesterday with the game against the Sabres, Coach Maurice wasn't adverse to using the second unit for almost the entirety of the power play on a couple of occasions. Mm-hmm. So it's one of those situations where it's a luxury to be able to have this many players. And on the penalty kill, you know, of course, the Jets still have their hiccups on the penalty kill. A guy like Joel Armia, though, is a standout on the penalty kill. I just think he you know, as he touched on it earlier in the show when he was just talking about how good Joel Armia is with the puck, and I just think his ability to get that puck on his stick and then keep it on his stick and then get it out of the zone is just one of those things. It doesn't show up on the stat sheet, but it's really an unheralded talent that I think he possesses, and it's one that, you know, he displays when he is given the opportunity. So that's why you do see him on the penalty kill.
And, Dave, I hate to give grades, but, I mean, we have been doing it so far today. But, I mean, the power play has to get an A+. But overall, I would probably give the special teams a B+, just because that penalty kill, I think, leaves a little bit more to be desired, especially on the road. Mm-hmm. The penalty kill at home has been substantially better than it has been on the road. But the power play, guys, we've been talking about this, it seems like, for the last maybe 3 or 4 years, that with all of the talent that the Jets have, the power play, you know, had to be better than it was. And finally this year, you know, Dave talked about it. I mean, they're obviously led by Patrick Laine, But you've seen Blake Wheeler excel on the power play. Matthew Perreault is a guy that I think is underrated on the Jets' power play, and he does so much with the puck, and he does so much without the puck. You know, he's a feisty player considering his size. So I think the power play is something, you know, that the entire team deserves credit for, and that includes the coaching staff, because the Jets were criticized so much for the special teams and the discipline and all of that this year. They're taking less penalties, they're killing off more penalties, and they're scoring more goals when they have the man advantage, especially at home. It seems like the Jets score, you know, 50% of the time at home. I realize it's, you know, closer to 30%, but even that, I mean, 30% is incredible.
And further to Ezzie's point quickly, is just you see a player like, he just talked about Matthew Perreault. Matthew Perreault doesn't get an assist on Blake Wheeler's power play goal yesterday, but if he doesn't set up that screen,
sure,
then there's probably not a goal, because that's an easy save. So the reality is that that's something that, again, it's one of those things you have to watch the totality of the game to really see the impact that some of these guys are having.
A quick note of caution regarding the Jets' power play. It's been very dependent on shot percentage so far. The Blake Wheeler power play unit up around 17.9% is their shooting percentage.
That's high.
And the Brian Little group, 30.3% on shooting percentage on the power play.
That's a wee bit above average.
That's a wee bit above average. So just a note of caution that you'd expect both of those numbers to drop down in the second half of the season, which you might see the power play begin to struggle a little bit more. But the Jets can potentially compensate for that by getting more shots through on the power play. They haven't been great at getting very many shots through on their power play. They're more possessing it on the outside than getting shots through on the opposing goalie. So something to keep an eye on as we enter into the second half of the season.
Yeah, Drew, and just one more note on that penalty kill I mentioned. The Jets are ninth with the home PK at 85.2%, but 19th on the road at 79.1%. So that's a pretty big discrepancy there.
Well, at least they're better than the Oilers on the penalty kill, because I've never seen anything that bad in my entire life. The Oilers' home penalty kill percentage down at around 56%, which is incredibly terrible. When we come back, Marty Biron is going to join us. You know him as a TSN, RDS, and MSG analyst. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.